You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Hey, Stars fans, welcome back. Matt and Ez here to break down some Andor season two. Matt, how you doing, buddy?
Hey, man, I am doing good. I feel refreshed. I rewatched the finale today, and it's
Hard.
Yeah, rewatched it. We're gonna talk about it here, but
it's
an almost perfect show. I think there's only one flaw with the show, and we'll talk about it. But yeah.
Yeah, and I mean that's so my opening question was literally going to be, did it suck?
No.
Just to get it right.
Not at all,
right? My god, it's such a good freaking show. So, I don't know, man. By the way, update for everybody here, just as I'm on the feed talking about this. Had a baby about 6 weeks ago. Matt and I've been talking for like 30 minutes or whatever here, and life is changing. Ez is going to be changing some stuff up, but just a quick little update for the little feed that I kind of got going over there. Things going to be freaking changing. Ain't got the time, Matt. Ain't got the freaking time no more. So I've been driving. Dude, I didn't even tell you this. I've been driving at night like 30 minutes, just like, not 30 minutes. I'm sorry, 3 hours. Let me take that back. So in between feeding sessions, I've just been driving, like listening to Star Wars books. I've been listening to some Game of Thrones stuff too, A Song of Ice and Fire. I mean, anything that I can, I've just been sort of consuming as I drive around and help Luke kind of get to sleep. So that's been crazy. So quick life update there for everybody who might've been wondering, because I think some people were, I had people messaging me, and actually I think you and I were on, there's a couple of comments on some shorts that we did where people were like, hey, can't wait to hear you guys' thoughts on Andor. And right. they kind of kept saying this as the thing went along. I was like, dude, I don't have any freaking time. I told Matt I wanted to cover it week by week because it is that freaking good.
I said that's not happening.
Yeah, Matt was like, he was like, Ez, let's just, you know,
let's take it day by day, bro.
Yeah, he kind of knew, and he kind of was like, yeah, you know, you mean well, Ez, but I mean, it's never gonna happen. So anyway, but yeah, let's dive into a couple of things, man. I mean, just give me your initial thoughts, season two. Andor, the finale, what'd you think?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we're going total spoilers here. The show is just fantastic, just like Rogue One, you know? And I felt much more about this season. It made me actually think more about Rogue One than season one did, since this season, obviously, season one was just like, hey, we're introducing to the world of Andor. It's totally different. And one of the things I loved about that was, man, just it had such a great dynamic in it, right? Like every time they would show anybody in the rebellion, it was always in like open fields and everything. And yeah, they're struggling, but then you'd go to the Empire and you also saw like that struggle, and you saw the, like, if you go look at the shots, especially in season one with the character, I can't remember his name, but the guy who died, who was that Imperial officer that was trying to get with Deidre, and he was like, I know where Cassian is. And I remember
Wait, Cyril?
Yeah, Cyril. Yeah. And remember, like, he was, and every time they showed like his apartment building or anything, it's always this like very uniform
right.
imagery. And it was just this like cool thing. And then season two, I felt like it just got so much bigger and everything felt much closer to Rogue One, which obviously it is. But it, like, you know, now we like like the finale, which we're going to talk about, but so amazing. But this time, like, now you really get to see all of the fallout with Mon Mothma, right? And her stand up to the Empire and say, like, Palpatine's the problem.
Dude, the freaking like, monster, dude.
Yeah. The weight of everything, even, oh God, I'm going to blank on his name too. The general who shoots himself.
Pelty Gar,
yeah. Well, he's Qyburn in Game of Thrones.
Right.
I mean that, like, every character got this like emotional ending to it, and yeah, they just wrapped it all up in this nice bow that ties right into Rogue One. I mean, the show, it just hits so hard. And I'll say the same thing about it that I said in season one, is that if this is like what it feels like, is if HBO was given a Star Wars show.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Yeah, it was really, because it seems like when you look at just the production, if you just look at like how many assets and resources and just how clean everything looks and how good, just the high quality of it, right? It is so, that alone was just sort of overwhelming and stunning. And so that's what HBO does, right? I mean, everything they do is going to be like top freaking notch.
Right.
They're not going to, I mean, I hate to even throw this name into the conversation, but you go back and look at The Acolyte, for example, which you and I covered last summer. What an absolute dog trash show. I mean, no standard whatsoever. Like, the cinematography was terrible. I personally didn't think they put enough quality or effort or money into it. And so then you look at this and you're like, dang, dude, it was just spectacular. Every time they showed the Senate building and that like lake out there, and like, I don't know if they built that set or something, but it was pristine. It was like when Mon was escaping with Cassian and they're coming down the stairs, and all of it just looked, I mean, it just looked so good. And it really looked and felt like Coruscant. That's the other thing too. You have to know that in Star Wars, there's certain things you can't mess up. And doing Coruscant, you have to do Coruscant right. Gotcha.
And I really felt like rewatching the finale today, like all the scenes on Yavin. I mean, it looks just like episode four. Yeah. And that was actually one of the things that made the prequels so cool, because it was like when we went back to Tatooine, it was like, this is the same set. This is the same, you know, thing. And it felt just like it. I mean, this is, in a way, it is actually a prequel of Rogue One, but I think it is like that quality of a show. Like, this feels like it belongs, you know, in with Rogue One. It
doesn't feel detached, and it does, like you said, when you can go back to those common locations, you have sort of this through line, right, in terms of like location, be it a character that was the same. Well, actually, you know, we even see, you know, Mon and some behind the scenes stuff in episode three, and we see to see her to kind of continue on with her character. There's the extra through line there, which I think is great. And then the same locations, to be talking about the rebellion, and to have it tie into Rogue One the way it did was just, you know,
phenomenal. One issue though.
Yeah.
Disney. Was Jimmy Smith's too expensive?
Dude, I have no idea.
I mean, what is the deal on that? It's kind of a big deal. That actor's, I forget his name off the top of my head, but he's a great actor and everything. But it's just like, I mean,
I think he could be wrong.
It's not like Jimmy Smits is super busy or anything right now, is he?
What they said. I think they said something about they said something about scheduling conflicts. You know what I think? I read somewhere on Reddit. I think it might be medical. I think it was something with his age.
That's not good. I love Jimmy Smits. He's great, man.
Me too.
I loved him in West Wing and all, you know, all these things.
Yeah. So I hope it's not. I could be wrong. I don't want to spread any rumors or anything, but I just read that. And I was like, dude, because I think everyone went and tried to figure out, like, why was he not there? Because he had so many good lines. That was such an important, you know, moment. The other guy did a great job, and it doesn't really super miss a beat or anything. It's just noticeable to all of us who love that actor. And definitely were hoping.
Yeah, I mean, he was in Rogue One. He was in Kenobi.
Right. That's, for even you just know, a moment.
He played Bail Organa. I'm looking at it here. He played Bail Organa in The Force Unleashed. I didn't even remember that.
That's cool.
You know, I mean, but yeah, he hasn't been anything. since.
Yeah. I gotta
he was in Kenobi, and then he was in a show called East New York, which I don't know anything about. But he was in that for like 21 episodes. So that looks like, you know, pretty big. But I mean, other than that, I mean, it's 2025. There's nothing on his IMDb about it.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's crazy. You know, I think I'm pretty sure it was you who said something like, hey, are you telling me Disney can recast Bale? Right.
Seriously, though. But yeah, I mean.
Right. And then they can't go recast other people. Like, come on, you know. So the door is open now. I mean, quite honestly, you went back to a young Obi-Wan and Ewan McGregor, right? So Alec Guinness was the original Obi-Wan. We've already recast like the main Jedi. So from originals to prequels, let's freaking do it. There are rumors, by the way, not to derail us here. There are rumors that there's a casting. There's a situation going on with Luke Skywalker.
And there should be.
There should be. And I think while we're talking about castings, yeah, I think it's a big deal. I think they should recast Luke Skywalker. And I hope it is the guy. What's the guy? Captain Mar. Oh my God.
Sebastian
Captain
America. Stan.
Yeah, Sebastian. Thank you. Yeah. I think he'd be great. I think they are actually talking to him. Remember the Rosario Dawson thing for years? Like that was a fan casting.
Yeah.
And people were like, and then boom, here we have it. I think that's going to happen. I think it's just been a matter of time building
it's just
up
a matter of getting it done. Yeah.
So anyway, but yeah, that is one of the, that was one of the glaring problems. I like
that's really the only problem I had with the show. And yeah. I looked it up. Yeah. And everything I can see is just that he wasn't available.
Yeah. And there's
nobody says why.
Right. And I think it's personal. I think it's something personal, which is fine.
Yeah.
Unfortunate. Yeah. Just so he knows we love him and he should have been at the freaking show. As long as he knows that the fandom wanted him there, I think that's all that really matters. But yeah, dude, because there was some great stuff with the Senate. I mean, my God, just even thinking about like Mon's speech, dude, like that was epic. Epic to have her come out there and do that. And to see some of the behind the scenes too, where she was like alone and she had this, she was alone giving that speech in some room where she walked up, but she climbed a ladder, got in a pod. She gives the speech and she's like, the fact that she was alone made that speech even more powerful to her because she thought of the essence of the speech and she is alone in that chamber, except for maybe Bale and a few other people, but truly alone in terms of standing up and stepping out and speaking up. So I was like, dude, that is,
it's huge.
That was cool. That was,
and really cool. And that's one of the things like finishing this season is that not that the originals ever needed it. Like, you know, we've talked a lot about like Clone Wars helped the prequels.
Right.
Right. Because it helped, you know, add a lot of context and make us like the characters even more. So by them, you know, it fixed a lot of the issues with that. Something the sequels really didn't have. Right. They had like Resistance and that didn't do pretty much anything. Right. And that's
right.
Something we thought maybe Mandalorian and stuff would do. But it is like, nope, we're kind of sticking closer to the originals is where we want to be. So maybe someday the sequels will get something like that. That will help sort of prop it up and add more to the characters. But it's like, man, this has added so, like, even Rogue One itself, like, it adds so much just to Episode 4.
Yeah,
being like, oh man, Vader's like right there, like this is what Vader does literally seconds before he steps on the stage.
Yeah.
And Leia right as well,
right?
But now, like, with this plus Rogue One and Andor Season 2, like, man, it makes all that stuff with Mon Mothma in there much bigger. I know.
Dude, I mean, I think they even did a good job. Like, you look at Mon, and I know it could just be that the actress, I'm not sure how they did this, but tell me if I'm wrong, and maybe I'm looking into it too much. But when earlier on in the season, she is more, I'll just say it. When she's on Yavin, it looks like she is more gaunt or strung out, a little bit like thinner, possibly even.
Oh, maybe.
Maybe they did that, or maybe that was something she did. I don't know. Maybe it's just the costume that she's wearing. Who knows? But I just kind of felt like there was a strain. You almost could see like this, like she,
yeah, I'm sure
over a year, which I thought was kind of,
yeah.
I don't know if that was just, yeah, the acting, but it was cool. It was really kind of cool just to see that evolution of that character. But yeah, all in all, I mean, you're right. So it sort of does. It really builds up this is the best thing they've ever done for the Rebellion. Like, to really showcase since the originals, to really show us the Rebellion and it's like, its foundation, where it came from, all the different components. I like, it makes everything else around it better. And even as I was thinking, I was like, well, what's going on with like Kenobi? Like, you know, when did that happen? And when did these other stories sort of take place? And where are certain characters at this time while this is going on? So to think about all that is just, is just wild. And I, you know, I'm huge into the Force and Jedi and all that kind of stuff. I think it's freaking sick. The mystic nature, the mystic side of things, none of that stuff, dude. I mean,
it's great.
Like, just enough that it was perfect. It was absolutely mysterious enough. There was a big enough sort of like mystery box around what was happening with the Force healer and Bix and Cassian. I mean, like, oh God, do I have something to tell you later that's going to blow your freaking mind? And it was phenomenal.
It's actually one of the things we were speculating so much, like, is Luthen Rail a Jedi?
Right,
like who is, like, yeah. We were thinking maybe he's, oh God, what's his name?
Rail Avaros or whatever, the
Rail Avaros, yeah, and all that stuff. Yeah. And we were just like, oh, I don't know, you know, and trying to, but it's just, it didn't need it,
It's
what it made. It's what made the show better, because the story is just about oppression and rebellion, and you don't need it. And it's one of the things I talk about the originals, and you and I've said for years, is that, like, at the heart of the story is like family and, you know, struggle and the rebellion and the oppression and all of these things. And that if you completely change the setting of the original movies to like knights and wizards, it 100% totally works. Right. It like, you can totally flip it on its head. Prequels, I think you can kind of do the same thing. But Andor, you could totally just rip this out and put it in like our world and make it about spies and countries and everything. And it still totally works, because the core story is good.
Right.
Whereas like a lot of the projects in Star Wars that have not done as well don't have a good core story. And they just, you can tell that they just lean too heavy into like, well, we're Star Wars, and just kind of phone it
in. Yes, they totally do. I mean, this drew upon way heavier themes. I mean, sacrifice, the cost of the rebellion. There was some psychological trauma going on with Bix from the beginning, and then psychological trauma for all of them, sort of with the monster, right? Emperor Palpatine. So the political intrigue too, like, how do you kind of, you know, balance certain things? That little bit where Bail is sort of like making way, he's using some special clause, some emergency clause, to like get her speaking time. I mean, it just had so many cool things that were relatable to stuff that we see in our real lives and that we've seen historically and stuff, right? So I mean, it was and then there even was like the subtle influence of the Force, but it was so subtle, and it was such a small, it was just the perfect amount. Literally, had Luthen been a Jedi and all that, I was watching it, I was like, that would be kind of crazy. When they started showing his backstory, I thought, if anything, there's no time to really go into some sort of crazy story with that. So I hope
I'm glad they didn't.
Yeah, me too.
They didn't need it.
It's still mysterious enough. We're not entirely sure sort of what all went down. I'd love to hear people's thoughts on like that backstory piece. You know, what faction was he working for there, kind of? And, you know, it was a little bit confusing. It was still ambiguous. But then to see him get Kleya, that's not even their names, right? Like Luthen and Kleya, not even their names. They actually take on those names and those identities after that moment and become someone different and become who they need to be to enter the rebellion. And they're sitting there on freaking Naboo, and you have all this like the cost of life and sort of revenge, and who's going to push the button. Was she ready for it? Like, for this, I mean, Luthen, like, never being able to see, what's he say, like the sunrise or the sunset for this whole rebellion that he's setting up, but he is saving that for Kleya. Like, he wants Kleya to see a better day, a new day, beyond the rebellion. And so like, he gives his life for that moment. Like, dude, that like, I was crying. I mean, first of all, I was crying from We Are the Gore. Dude, the whole Gorman like situation was the most ridiculous. I was up late at night. Like, Lottie would watch the first episode with me. Then I would watch the final two. She'd go to bed and we'd catch him the next day. I'm sitting there in like episode the second one, I think it was like nine or ten.
Yeah.
I'm literally, I kid you not, when they start singing, I just start like, they stopped the chanting, because they were chanting in basic, right? In English, if we will, but it's Galactic Basic. And then they go to like their native language and they start singing. And I'm like, oh my God, dude. And it just struck there. And I'm like, and you've got the like the journalists in front who are literally spreading propaganda right there in the midst of this. And with your own eyes, if you're Mon, right, in the Senate chamber and the other senators, any galactic citizen looking at this, you're going, that is not that what is happening behind these reporters is literally not what they're talking about. This is no uprising. They're out there singing in protest. They're standing, they're swaying, they're protesting there. And it was brilliant. It was absolutely brilliant. And the pacing of it was crazy good, especially that third, you know, three arc sort of episode that we had there. That was actually the second half of this was beautiful. Oh, so good.
It's like season one. Both seasons start with a really slow burn.
Yeah.
Like I actually thought the season, like you back to season one, man, it takes like six episodes before stuff. I actually thought there for a while, cause he was watching it week to week. I was like, Right. Like, cause it's like five or six episodes before they like blow up the base. Right.
Right.
That they're
right,
on
right,
in, right. in season one. And like this season too, I was like, oh man, here we are. Slow burn again. But the back half of it's just so good.
So good. So freaking good. And so let's just dive into a couple big scenes here and just break them down. Yeah. But let's just go right to the big one, dude. That final scene.
It's one of the best moments of Star Wars.
It's literally one of the literal best moments in Star Wars, period. Can't believe it.
It's so good. And it's literally just this montage of him walking in the opposite direction of everyone, which is just such a great parallel to the fact that we know he's gonna die. Like,
dude,
he they're all like gearing up, getting ready to fight, you know, in the event it's going to happen, and he's walking in the other direction. They're playing the soft music. They could do a flat. They kind of cut to every different character. And, you know, you get to see this, including Saw Gerrera and everything.
Right.
And then, like, finally, you know, at the end with, like, his baby. It's actually, in a way, it, like, mirrors Rogue One. Because in Rogue One, it ends with them looking up as, like, everything's about to get destroyed.
Right.
And they die. And then here, it's the opposite, where, like, she's looking up. We know Cassian is going to go die, but the baby's there. And so there is hope. And you get to see this. It helps add to his sacrifice because Rogue One is much more about Jyn Erso's story.
Yes.
Right. Like we get her side of this whole thing. And so Andor gives us Cassian's side of the whole thing.
Great.
And it's just such a powerful moment. And it's one of the things too, where I think this show did a very good job of really showing how much, like really how like they pieced this whole rebellion together. And like you get to see the importance of it because you have all these players. Like at the end when Cassian is talking about like, hey, well, Luthen was the real deal. And a lot of people don't like him. But a lot of people also don't like Saw Gerrera.
Right.
Right. They don't trust him either. And then you have Mon Mothma there and Bail Organa, and you have all these players and they all have totally different allies and things and their own constituents, essentially, you know, that they have to worry about because they don't want to be the ones that cause their world to get blown up or destroyed or anything. And it really actually adds. This season really adds a lot to when Jyn Erso is standing there talking in Rogue One.
Yes.
And she's like trying to convince everyone like we need to go now. And it's Mon Mothma.
Right. It is. And they actually did a good job of showing, like you said, setting us up for that because it feels like they're sitting on Yavin and they've been sitting there for quite some time and they're kind of almost getting antsy. Even people are starting to think like, should we be doing more? Should we be doing something? We're just amassing this host and we're sitting here. We're sitting ducks right now. Should we do more? Thank God they freaking do. Thank God they freaking go. And I love the moment when Cassian is they're questioning him about Luthen. Like you said, different factions coming together. It's not pretty. Rebellion is not clean cut. It's not going to be like absolutely perfect. There's going to be some factions that are too extreme, some that are not going to want to do anything. And they're kind of riding the fence and they're back and forth. And then you got those agents like you needed somebody to stay on the inside. I mean, he literally sacrifices everything to stay there for every little ounce of information he can get. I mean, I know he didn't want to kill that ISB agent, but he had to. you remember the situation where in season one of Andor and he after an after they blew up the base and they got all the credits and stuff, and the one guy is sitting there and is like skiing or something. He's like, hey, we can split this. The moment he said, he mentions betrayal and says we could split this money, and Cass has to shoot him. And yeah. I was watching, I was like, shoot him. I was watching it going, you got to shoot this guy. You got to shoot him. When Luthen said the word Yavin, when he said, I can send you to Yavin, I looked at Lottie. I said, he's a dead man. And she's like, what? I was like, like, if you know anything about it, you can't say that unless he's going to take him right there, right now. That's an inside guy who they're on. He's already said they're on to him. And then, boom, he had to kill him. So it just wow. But the moment where Cassian is trying to persuade them that, like, you know, they should trust Luthen and talking about this information that they got, they questioned, like, when's the last time that you've seen Luthen? And he was like, when I rescued Senator Mothma.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. Like, did you guys forget that a year ago? Like, don't forget who brought her to the table. Like, Bale's team was literally compromised. He knew it. You can't tell anyone. Like, there were too many things that he was buried in secrets, and he did get a little bit lost along the way in a sense. But I love the idea that you needed those ideological leaders to look to. And Luthen knew he could not be that for he knew his place and where he served the rebellion best. And that Mon was someone you had to get out. Bale, eventually, you had to get these people out there that, like, people could look up to. He didn't feel like you could look up to him. That wasn't his role. He was in that, like, that his whole speech, man, in season one was so good. And there were so many echoes of that throughout season two that it was so real. It just felt so real and so legit. So
it's because it's so great, because it doesn't have Jedi.
Yeah.
It doesn't need to. And that's one of the, I think we need more shows like this.
Right. Isn't it ironic that you have a show like Andor that has zero Jedi, very little to do with the Force, all about rebellion. And it's going to be the most successful Star Wars show or product could be ever. And you have another show that has nothing but Jedi, all of these Jedi, tons of Jedi, a whole assault team of Jedi facing down Chimer or whatever his freaking name is in the Acolyte. And it's going to be the actual worst Star Wars thing. It does teach you a little bit of a lesson about priorities are.
Well, and I'll be honest. I said this before, man, I even thought about it more too, because we know we're getting season two of it. I really didn't like Ahsoka. And that's something I've been thinking about too. Like, after this, is just like, man, like, I really, really, really hate that they turned Sabine into a Jedi. It just sticks at my craw so much because it's just like, we just didn't need it.
Right.
We didn't need, like, we already have her story. Her story was so cool in that she was like, am I like part of the Mandalorian faction, or am I just myself?
Right. Yeah.
And that was so cool. And then we already have another character who is like, am I a Mandalorian or am I a Jedi, in Grogu?
Mm-hmm.
And then like he doubles back down on it with Sabine. And it's like, we're already going to go get Ezra. We've already got.
I know.
Ahsoka. Do we really need it? You know? And it's just like, this show has none of that. Even Rogue One. I mean, yeah, Rogue One has Chirrut, and you like dive into like the Force a little bit. And then obviously, you know, you have the big Vader scene, but look at how different it is when you just have one, like, essentially Sith in Vader who that's what makes Vader seem way more menacing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. You feel like nobody's got a shot against this guy.
No.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Right. Like, it makes that hallway scene seem so epic. It's the same thing that even makes the hallway scene in Mandalorian season two so epic, when Luke shows up and he's like, you know, like, because he's the only one. I mean, you saw Ahsoka earlier, but she's like nowhere close. Like, it's, you know, you don't want to have it all the time, or else it doesn't feel as impactful.
Let me say something kind of ridiculous, and maybe I don't know. I'm just going to say it. There are the two greatest moments that Disney Star Wars has given us have been the return of Luke Skywalker in The Mandalorian at the end of season two, and Bix, last scene of Andor season two. And the scene with Bix and Cassian's child is better.
I have another scene that is also from Andor, One Way Out, man.
Oh, dude. That's
it's like a top five scene for me in all of Star Wars.
Well, I mean, that just begs the question then, like, is
and what's her name? Better? And Deidre got stuck there. That was a huge.
Oh, that was huge. That was sick. I was actually so happy. Her whole dude. Oh my God. Like all of these characters. Like first I was thinking Cyril.
So
I
thought good. It
was like season one. I'm kind of like, okay, it's quirky. It's weird. Whatever. What's this going to grow into? And I freaking loved that dude by the end. He was in there with the Gormans and literally started to realize he's only there to get Cassian. That's his whole freaking thing. He wants to draw Axis out. And so he realizes they're not doing that. He has been toyed with. He's been used. He's been all these different things. And he's realizing these people are all going to die. And it goes back to the idea that the Empire was meant to protect these citizens. They're meant to... You know, that they're it's just a new structure for what was the Republic. So those protections should be granted to these citizens. They should be helping them and stuff, and instead of oppressing them. And the rumor is that they're dropping mining equipment all over the planet. And he has to go to Dedra and basically say like what's up? What's going on? So he's broken. He's broken. And the one person he wanted to find there, ironically, the whole time looking for outside agitators is Cassian. Had he have seen Cassian before, he'd have been like, all right, we're on to something. Those outside agitators, boom, there's my guy. I knew it all along. This was my goal, was to bring in, to set a trap for someone like that. And really, he's just being used the whole time. And she is shaking at the end. She's completely, I can't believe she's still alive. That was the other thing too, that in Star Wars, in canon, she is still out there and she's still in the prisons, right? Mm-hmm. So... I mean, she's still a player in terms of storytelling, and so is Bix and you know, Cass's son, and I think it's just super cool.
Yeah, I want to talk just a little bit about the Partagaz is the guy.
Thank you. Yes.
Anton Lesser is the actor. I thought, man, that was also just kind of a powerful scene, because there's actually there's some people debating it on Reddit and stuff like that, like exactly why, like, because he's listening to the message. And he's talking about like it's growing like wildfire. And then so some people are saying, like, why did he shoot himself? Right. Mm-hmm. Did he just do it because he thought he was like, well, I failed. I know they're going to kill me anyway. Was it because he was believing in the rebellion? I actually think in like rewatching it today, I think he doesn't necessarily believe in the rebellion, but I mm-hmm. think he knows the Empire's gone.
Yeah,
I think it's more from like the Empire side, where he's just like, it's crumbling and he can see it. Right. I mean, he can truly see that he's like, because he says like it spreads everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like
he's like, pretty much no matter what we do, he's like, it's going to continue to grow and there's just nothing we can do.
Right. And I think there's some in season one, he talks about like a disease, or it's spreading like a disease. And then it kind of mm-hmm. paralleled later on in season two, where he's sort of seeing, like you said, you know, the manifesto is being spread all throughout the galaxy. And there's just really nothing you could do to stop it. And that awareness, like you said, the awareness of what happens to Dedra Miro and what they did to Cyril and the Gormans. He knows all the atrocities. And over time, it starts to weigh on you. You know what I mean? Like if you're in, and maybe you keep the general, you're keeping all the Empire's dirty secrets. That's what that guy's doing. And so I think I also thought it was maybe a combination of those things. Like, is it all the dirty secrets? Is it the people lost along the way? Is it also that he's kind of screwed because he, you know, the Death Star project is basically leaked.
Yeah.
And he's royally screwed. And then you know, like when he's sitting there, with Krennic at the beginning of the season, they're talking about stuff. I mean, he knows the game that's being played, and he's like letting Dedra sort of know, like, this is like, he even says, you can't tell Cyril about this. And like, they just know how wrong it is, and they know what they have to do, and they're dedicated to their role. And I think at first they start off and they really maybe believe in what they're doing. But then as time goes on, this monster grows and grows and grows. Palpatine, yeah. And his influence and what he really wants to do just gets leaked out there. And these guys in the upper levels, they know. So,
yeah, I think you can see that too. Like, even though like Palpatine's not even in this show, like you can really feel his weight of this whole deal. And like with the Death Star and everything. And it's like, even at the top of this whole thing. Like, yeah, no matter how good you are, no matter how, like, none of it compares essentially to Vader and Palpatine.
Right. Right.
Like they're the ones that at the end of the day, everyone has to answer to.
Yeah.
And like their plans are their plans, no matter what anyone else thinks.
Absolutely.
Like the only person who feels even like they're even anywhere close to Vader and Palpatine is Tarkin.
Tarkin. I was going to say the same. Yeah. That's it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Because he's even above, like, look at how much weight, like, I mean, even then you see it in Rogue One, like Krennic. I mean,
I know.
Well, he's super far up, and he knows he's the guy building this secret thing. Like, could you imagine if like the Senate found out about this thing, like, beforehand? Like, you think Mon Mothma and everybody's scared now? I mean, they talk about like, oh, they're building some kind of a weapon, but we don't know yet. And then of course they figure it out in Rogue One. But yeah, I mean, like, even Krennic, you know that, like, if things had gone, like, extremely well for him, which, I mean, he delivers the weapon. It's right. Not.
The best piece of financial advice I've ever received is to pay yourself first. That's why now, with every paycheck I receive, I start by putting a little bit away for those rainy days. Today's episode is sponsored by Acorns. Acorns is a financial wellness app that makes it easy to start saving and investing for your future. Acorns lets you get started with the spare money you've got right now, even if all you've got is spare change. You don't need to be an expert. Acorns recommends a diversified portfolio that can help you weather all of the market's ups and downs. Using Acorns, before I knew it, I had a couple thousand dollars in a little nest egg account. Sign up now and join the over 14 million all-time customers who have already saved and invested over $25 billion with Acorns. Head to acorns.com/heartbreak or download the Acorns app to get started. Paid non-client endorsement. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Tier 1 compensation provided. Investing involves risk. Acorns Advisors LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/heartbreak.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Lowe's knows that no matter your paint or stain project, saving is at the top of your to-do list. Save now with buy one, get one half off select paints, stains, and primers from top brands like Valspar, HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams, and Cabot via Visa gift card rebate. Find more Memorial Day deals now at Lowe's. We help, you save. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, discount taken at time of purchase. See sales associate for details. Offer valid 5/15 through 5/28.
Like,
right.
He doesn't, no, we're going to get rid of you. We don't need you. It's literally like, right. Vader and Palpatine especially, because Palpatine will get rid of Vader. So when Luke comes along.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. It is.
It's literally all Palpatine.
All Palpatine.
I think you feel that like in this, and it was, you didn't even need him.
No, this, exactly. All you had to do was mention his name, dude. Every time they did, I got shivers. Anytime they said, Peltigar said he's come from a meeting with Palpatine, I was like, oh, are you serious? I was just in the room with Palpy? Like, that is wild. And then Yularen was, they talked about him. Krennic had been there meeting. They're all meeting with the Emperor. And it just makes those guys scary dudes, because we know how freaking scary the Emperor is. So to have them just talking about being in his presence, it's like, what, where is he? What is he doing? You know, what was the meeting like? It's something we never want. It's a mystery box you never open, but just to hear them talk indirectly, it's such a good move. And you can feel the weight of Palpatine all over this. And then for Mon, for that to build all the way up to Mon calling him this monster that is coming for everyone was terrific. It was literally gave me chills to see that speech and to see, and to know what it was going to cost her. She knew she'd be arrested. She knew she had to have an escape. She could not speak out. It was wild, man. It was just Yeah, it was, again, top notch. And they had every little element of rebellion, insurrection, and just tyranny, yeah. all the stuff. It really captured all of it. And it really pieced together. It's a very good bridge between like the end of, you know, episode 3, Revenge of the Sith, and sort of like what happens there, and then taking us through this, the growth of the Empire and their power and their reach, and sort of like what the citizens, how the citizens are dealing with this. And there's rumors about arrests, and they're raising the penalties on certain things. Right. And that's why Cass is in there, you know, and the prison scene and all that kind of stuff. It's, you can feel the weight of it through the Galactic Citizens. They showed it through Gorman and the different planets and what they were. Ferex is the, you know, right. We start there, right. It's like you see it through their eyes, and it's just,
You know, I'll say this. Is Disney, since Disney has bought Star Wars, their real focus has been, I think you can honestly look across all the projects, is Disney has really been trying to make you feel like the Empire is way more evil than you think. Like, I mean, if you really look across the board, I'm talking books, everything.
Right.
And I think like the projects that have really done that the best are the ones, like that message that I think like his, like the Disney overall power, you know, here's the Kathleen Kennedy, like this is what we need to do to amplify like the other movies and everything.
Right.
Like that was some of the best parts of the sequels, to be fair, like where they blew up an entire system. Like what?
Yeah,
you know, right. Like, I mean, you know what I mean? Like that was a big deal. The Mandalorian, like immediately, like even those first like few episodes, seeing like the stormtrooper helmets, and it's the remnants of the Empire and everything. A lot of the books you and I have liked, I think the Phasma book is amazing.
Yeah, it's good.
And even the Leia bloodlines.
Yeah,
where she's talking to the guy, I can't remember his name, but he was like, hey, some of us actually, you know, liked the Empire.
Right.
It provided structure and all of this stuff. And so Andor has done a really good job with, like, Bad Batch was pretty good at showing that and showing it from the clones side of everything. So really that has been kind of the MO for Disney, like with Star Wars. And I think the things that have the programs or the shows or whatever, the projects that have really like made that their core have been the ones that have been the best.
Yeah, for sure. And I think they should learn something from that. They should, hopefully they're taking, I mean, notes on what products they've put out there and what has been working and what's been resonating with people. I mean, it's always been, even back when the originals, I mean, God, back in the 90s, it was so cool to play games as the Empire and to just go see what that was like, and just to be like, they were so ominous, they were so big, they were so powerful, and so they had the cooler tech, they had everything, right? And so you needed heroes and Jedi to beat them and stuff. So yeah, it's always been a really good move, and this show totally proves that, just showing us the ins and outs of it, and then also showing us, like, you know, the citizens of Coruscant. Mandalorian did a great job of this, and Andor did a great job, is that the citizens of Coruscant, they roll with it, man. It's like, okay, the Republic, the Empire, the New Republic. And so you have a world like that just sort of keeps going. It's one of those tier one worlds. And then you get down to some of the tier three, like outer rim places, or even mid rim worlds, where it's like, they're the ones who are kind of having all the issues, right? It's like almost like your third world countries, where they're providing all the resources and they're being, you know, raked over, and they're being claimed by the big Empire, or the big countries, the superpowers of the world, right?
Mandalore or whoever.
Yeah. So I think you're right. I think 100%. This was necessary. This is one. You know how sometimes Disney does a show like The Acolyte, and you think, what was this? This show was
even Skeleton Crew, I was kind of like,
right. I mean, yeah. Like, it ended up being like fun or whatever, but what this tied in. So if you're gonna do tie in stuff, like you and I have been talking for years about, like, gap filler shows and stuff. Okay, fill your gaps. At some point, they're going to be relatively full. I mean, there's still a galaxy, and there's always little tiny stories you can tell, but like the big stuff, you know, with your TV shows and movies, like, all right, we're there. I mean, we've got a Darth Maul, you know, animated thing coming, which will be kind of cool. That's also leading us from Revenge, you know, in the end of the Clone Wars into other stuff and sort of the underworld. So that's still a story that can be told. It's cool. Like Andor, once they did Rogue One was something spectacular. The fact that Disney did that.
I know.
It is stunning. Absolutely.
It's what gave us hope for Last Jedi.
It's everything.
Because we were like, right. Force Awakens, pretty good. And then it's like Rogue One, amazing. And it's like, all right, dude, Last Jedi might be freaking phenomenal.
Yeah, right. Phenomenal. And what's crazy, oh my God. So what's the guy's name? Tony Gilroy, right? Yeah. Who basically, I didn't realize how involved he was in Rogue One and coming in and doing some re-edits and just different things. And apparently it was a lot more than we realized. And back then we used to debate, like, did Kathleen Kennedy make the right move with the Solo guys, right? Who she fired. She fired those directors and she brought in Ron Howard. And then, you know, we had this situation with Rogue One, and like Solo movie, you know, was different than Rogue One, but like she has those decisions to kind of make. And there was a lot of criticism. I saw somebody ask the other day, like, should Kathleen Kennedy be given, you know, a lot of credit for Andor season one and season two? Now, Tony Gilroy, yeah, 100%, right? I mean,
she's like, she's still the one who greenlights the projects and everything. Like, you and I actually, like, a lot of people are like, oh, you know, some people are like, oh, you guys hate Kathleen Kennedy. If any, we're some of the people who actually are, I think, the most fair in how we argue about her.
But because I think if you're going to say, like, Acolyte, you know, boo Kathleen Kennedy, terrible choice, etc., blah, blah, it was bad hire. I mean, she literally looked at that and said, yeah, agreed, canceled, but, not right, greenlit, never going back to that again.
But she's also the one who greenlit The Mandalorian.
Exactly, The Mandalorian, Andor. So again, there's been some really, really, I stopped right there. The Mandalorian and Andor is where I stopped.
Well, I mean, you know,
there's some other good things.
Other things have been good. I mean, it's not like everything.
Yeah, I will say
real quick, just because you and I haven't talked about it at all, but I just very briefly, we don't have to get into a whole thing, because that'd be like a whole another hour or whatever. But
yeah.
Even though a lot of the projects they announced at Celebration seem like they're like legit going to happen, like the Ryan Gosling Starfighter movie, you know, whatever, it's still just hard to get excited about any of them when you've like this. That's what you've done. You've said, like, you've announced 100 movies. Know. You had a freaking trailer of what's her name, the Wonder Woman director. How am I blank?
Patty Jenkins.
Yeah, driving around and doing a photo shoot on a freaking tarmac with a, you know, jet and being like, my dad was a fighter pilot or whatever, and here comes Rogue Squadron, and where's it at?
Right. You know what I think she's seen some early scripts and concepts for some of that stuff, and she said it's way off. I could be wrong, but I think maybe some stuff has not come. There was problems
Don't announce it.
That is actually one of, I think, the biggest Pr sort of, like,
because Marvel announces movies and everything, and I mean, it's like they follow through. I mean, it's like I can count on my hand the number of things. It's like, okay, they had to get rid of Kang Dynasty because Jonathan Majors, you know, had a bunch of issues. Okay. Yeah. And then Blade is having issues. But other than that, they pretty much deliver on just about everything.
Right. Right. And Disney is Lucasfilm, the opposite here in terms of, like, they're delivering of things. And then some of the stuff that they've delivered, you've been like, dude, come on. That was.
And by the way, I do want to, that's a point we haven't brought up. It's not like Kathleen Kennedy is in charge of Lucasfilm, not just Star Wars. Right. Like, and, Willow was also a flop. So it's not like she's criticize her, it's like, oh, it's just Star Wars. No, it's all of Lucasfilm. That includes, because Willow was also a flop.
Right, true. That's true. Unfortunately,
that needs to be included in the argument.
One epic moment where he drops the staff.
I know, because but a lot of people are like, oh, you guys just, it's just Star Wars fans. No, we are like trying to be fair in the whole thing.
Yeah, really. I mean, seriously, like, I think this was actually Tony, to his credit, was talking about, there was an interview with him the other day where he's talking about Kathleen Kennedy and sort of the tough job that she has. And he said, we came to her and we said we wanted to open Andor season one in a brothel. She said, yeah, we want to kill this person. She said, go for it. So it seems like, I guess I've always wondered, where does Kathleen Kennedy push in and take more control, and when does she back up? That's up to her. That's her decision, right? So we never will ever get the behind the scenes on that, because sometimes you wonder if her influence, did it make it worse, or did her influence make it better, or did her exit or step back make it better or make it worse? What's the case there? And that's a judgment call that she makes with years of experience and stuff. And at the end of the day, you just judge the products. You judge the end result and her decision-making with Tony.
Well, So exactly. And I mean, it comes down to a lot of it too. I'm like, I'm glad the Taika Waititi thing has never happened, because I think he's, I a flop. I think it'd be a fluke. Yeah. Thor Ragnarok was a fluke.
Right.
Right. Yep. You know, yep. It's like Thor Love and Thunder was awful. And then he asked Natalie Portman if she'd love to be in a Star Wars movie. It's like, huh?
Dude, she's Padme, bro. Like, are you, don't even pretend like you've seen
Star Wars. Yeah.
It literally all comes down to,
I think, with most movies and everything, you just have to get the right people. You have to get the right crew. You have to get the right cast. You have to get the right the stories in order for things to be successes, you know, right. And the right momentum and the right timing. There's so much that goes into it. And Andor, I think, is finally, you know, season one was amazing. And I think season two hit hard because you had all of the right pieces come together at the right time, a time in which, like, we're kind of like, are we ever going to have a good Star Wars thing again after, like, for me, Ahsoka? That was the first Filoni project where I was like, I don't know about this. And then Skeleton Crew, Acolyte. And I was like, all right, Skeleton Crew. Okay, whatever. You know, like, I just.
Right. I know.
Not for me. And now Andor hits. Okay. Now I feel good about Star Wars again.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I feel like that's a lot of the fandom has. I think we're kind of in touch with a lot of the fandom where it's like, all right, you know, when's the next thing that gets us excited? That brings tears to our freaking eyes, dude. Like, I'm telling you, as a grown freaking man, I'm sitting here going, like, I'm crying late at night with the We Are the Gore. Like, I'm literally sitting there chanting it with them. I mean, afterwards, I'm like going to school, like, We Are the Gore, dude. Like, I couldn't believe it. It was so good. And then you get to the last three episodes and you're just like, God, this is just pacing so well. And it came out perfectly. I want to say just while you're looking something up there real quick, I want to take us through one more thing real quick. Just I want to lead us in one more time to that big scene. And I'm going to ask you a couple questions here at the end. Okay. Just real quick. So as you said, what got me, I'm just going to tell you where I started crying, because I'll just admit I was crying when Cassian is putting on his Rogue One costume, his uniform, he's putting it on. In his hut, he picks up the water can and he starts watering his flowers. I started choking up. I was like, no.
Like, so good.
Because I already know that he's on the way out. They've already greenlit this mission for him. And he starts watering his damn plants like he's coming back. And I just want, because, you know, I mean, who's going to water him? Like, I was just like, holy smokes. And like you said, that march and that walk, that everything leading up to it, I was like, from the moment he watered the plants, moving along, and I didn't know where it was going to go, how it was going to end, but I was already choking up because I knew where he was walking. When he walks past the Force healer and she sees him, I started again, like a little sob. I'm like, oh, God, he's seeing her. And it reminded you of Bix. And I thought, holy, they're starting to show different people and show us where they're at and what's happening. I'm like, oh my God, we saw the Force healer. They're gonna do it. They're gonna show us Bix somewhere, and we're all gonna cry. I said to Lottie a few episodes back, I was like, maybe Bix has seen something in the Force, because Bix said when she took Cassian to be healed, he's like, why are you hanging out with this woman? You know, like, he almost said the phrase hokey religion. Like, as if it's just something, come on, Bix, you know. But no, she started to change her hair. She was calmer. She was healing. She was with this Force, you know, sensitive individual. And she was definitely getting some clarity. And she said, Cass, I've been dreaming. I've been having dreams. And I got chills all over my body. I thought, dude, she just said everything I have ever thought that you should do in Star Wars is somebody has a vision. And the Force healer was basically saying, like, Cassian is someone who gathers as he goes along. He's gathering this momentum. The Force, essentially what she said to me was, the Force was swirling around him. He was this individual that was being called to a great destiny. And, like, she saw it. Bix sees it. Bix knows. Bix knew she was pregnant when she left. She literally had a Force vision and said, there will be no future for that child if he does not go. Yeah. I mean, un-freaking believable.
Look, all I'm going to say is, they didn't really show if it was a boy or a girl, but the child.
Yeah, the child. You
know, the child, looking at the timeline, would be old enough to be, like, entering Luke Skywalker's Jedi Academy. Like,
I know. God, that's what I mean. It's so freaking good. And you know what? Another thing
is, he would be basically, he's born in zero BBY.
Right.
right? Exactly. So he would, so he'd be like,
by the time 10, he's 30.
Yep. No, by the, yeah. So he'd be like 10 when Mandalorian is taking place, when Luke is building his
academy,
So he'd be like, he's perfect age.
Right. What I'm thinking is like, so even at the end of the, well, when Force Awakens hits, he'd be 30.
Like 30.
You know what I mean? So he's 30 years old. So it's kind of like, was he a part of some, you know, Luke's academy? Was he a knight that got trained and then he went off?
Or was he was he just one of the ships that shows up in Rise of Skywalker?
Right. Was he one of the ships? Yeah. He could be. I mean, seriously, it could be. There's a tons of stories that you could tell there. But let me take you through something just for a second.
So basically, real quick, he would be the same age as He'd be like the same age as Jason Syndulla.
Yes, he would be. Yeah. Because again, very, the fandom loved that, right? You know, it's a, you have Kanan and his sacrifice for Hera and the rebellion and everything, the like the defeat of Thrawn. I mean, that's the, it kind of echoes that. So literally, Andor just gave us the perfect way to introduce a Luke Skywalker child. Exactly how they did it is exactly what I've been saying for years. Mara Jade enters the academy. She grows close with Luke. All of a sudden, she starts to get kind of this clarity. And you start to see very subtly just how Bix changed. Her dress changed. She let her hair down. She became softer in her speech, and she was less erratic, right? She had healed from her trauma. Same sort of thing with Mara Jade stepping out of the dark side, coming to Luke, healing, working with him at the academy. And then the Force sends a vision, some sort of clarity, and she knows she needs to step away. Literally, Bix gives us exactly how they could do a Luke Skywalker child and a Mara Jade. And this is just my personal kind of, I've always loved this idea. And I was watching it going, I told Lottie over and over, I was like, they're literally doing exactly what I said they should do for Mara Jade. Like, if you are a fan of Mara Jade and you're a fan of Luke Skywalker having a child, which I was, I always have been because I'm like, Rey should have been an actual Skywalker, Luke's daughter, or she should have been a Kenobi, or she should have been a Solo, or she should have been someone. Even if she's a Palpatine, stay a freaking Palpatine. But like literally, it's like this is now the path forward. And they've already been rumors about like bringing in a Mara Jade. If you're going to bring a Mara Jade in, do it right then. Actually, like Andor lays out the perfect way to introduce that Skywalker child if you want to. And if you want there to be like a Rey seeking out like Luke's children and Mara, who went and saw the future. She had a premonition of the destruction of Luke's temple. Kylo Ren, whatever you want to do to make it fit in canon, your crazy sequel, you know, story. Right there is a way you can do it. The Skywalker legacy can freaking continue, right? Andor's child, we never, ever, ever, when we're watching Rogue One, never did I think that he was.
Never thought, yeah.
Never thought he had a child out there somewhere. That was insane. And so to see Bix, I'm just thinking, oh, you know, because they set it up at the beginning of Andor, Bix has a boyfriend, Tim, you know? And like, it seems like she's been with Cassian and she likes Cassian, but Cassian's on the run. He's obsessed with finding his sister. And so, all right, well, I'll settle for Tim. Well, Tim gets shot, unfortunately, you know, and it's all this. You know,
bye-bye, Tim.
Bye, Tim. Sorry. but really, she's always loved. She's loved Cass. She always has. You can tell from the moment that they're in there, there's history. There's this romance, and there's this, you know, that something's going on. And so it's great. And once he starts to settle and he is gathering along the way, like he's there for her. He loves her. And this just built up to where when she left, I just thought there is no way that like I could almost predict it, that there was going to be a child. And I was just hoping, I was so hopeful that they would actually do it. And then when they did, I couldn't believe it. And it's the same thing I would love to see with like, it's just so good. Actually, it's so good that I want to ask the question, is Andor better than The Mandalorian? What do you think? You got 3 seasons of The Mandalorian, 2 seasons of Andor. Which is better? I think they're the top two
for products. Sure, 100%. So yeah, I think they're the top two, and it's not even close. Oh, that's tough because they're just
I know, different. So different.
They're just different things.
Yep.
Yeah. It's hard. Season 3 of The Mandalorian, to be fair, is kind of like okay. It's not like it wasn't nearly as good as season 2. Like season 2 was like really good. Like season 2.
For sure.
Season 2 of Mandalorian is like almost like peak Star Wars. Yeah. Right? Like Luke showing up and the whole thing, seeing Ahsoka again.
Ahsoka. Yeah.
Was a big deal. And then season 1 is just kind of good. Like just in its own right, it's good.
Right.
Start to finish, though, in terms of, like, if I were to rank every episode and then go, like, quality,
Yeah.
Andor has more. The back half of both Andor seasons are like almost all nines and tens.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of both seasons. However, right. The first like five episodes of both are like sevens because they're real slow.
They're slow. Yeah, I get you.
And yep. But the Mandalorian has probably a lot more eights, like a lot of like eight. But remember, because some of the Mandalorian episodes, you get like real, like it's like you go from like a 40-minute episode to like a 20-minute episode.
I know. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's cool side stories.
Kind of tough. And then Book of Boba Fett also kind of like, is it really like a Mandalorian season?
I know.
Yeah. It's hard to say, but I would say quality wise. Yeah. The like Andor probably has more 10 out of 10 episodes.
Yeah, and it is even different in terms of like the budget, like Mandalorian doing stuff with the volume and different things. Right. Like they did totally different things. It's a different thing because Andor's budget was good, and there were big sets being built, and it just felt real. It felt bigger. Everything about it felt bigger and more. You know,
because it's characters. It's not. Yeah. You're not dealing with Jedi and all that stuff.
Right. Yeah. So I mean, for me, I think right now, like ask me before this season, now Mandalorian's still better. Having cried as much as I did, teared up as I did in season two, I never did that. I did it once in Mandalorian. It was for Luke, you know, yeah. I mean, so and Ahsoka, I was like, oh my God, this is, I got chills for sure. But I never, ever, ever thought that Andor would cause me to tear up three, four times in season two. Never thought that was going to happen. And when it did, I was torn. I was just blown away. And I literally cannot thank all those actors and everybody and just for bringing something like this. Because, we're fans of Star Wars. We want Star Wars to succeed. We've always wanted something like this. And so to have this be the thing and to have it be, it's such an important thing. Could you imagine if this would have flopped? Could you imagine if this leading into the rebellion and explain? I mean, how bad would that have been? Like if this were Acolyte quality or this were some sort of joke, silly kind of shit. It couldn't be. And I think, thank God, Kathleen knew that. And Tony like, came in and did
it's like,
a great
it's like
job.
Kenobi. It's like, thank God in the moments they needed to hit, they did.
Yeah, I know. Cause
that, a lot of the rest of Kenobi was not. Kenobi is a teeter totter. It's like, you go from like, what is going on here to like epic. I mean, it's like,
dude, yeah, you go from the Kenobi Vader fight to like Leia force sliding down a hill to get away from people.
I mean, like, well, even the first Vader Kenobi fight was just basically in like looked like like a back alley parking lot of like some junkyard. It was not good, but the final scene's great. And then Vader like the ship, like, you know, just throw it, and that was sick.
Right. I mean, just go look at the lighting and the sets and the production of Andor and what they did there versus what they did in Kenobi. And I know there's not even close. I watch a lot of different Star Wars content creators, and a guy who was always super Star Wars theory, who was always so upset because why would you not give, you know, Hayden and Ewan a better budget? Why wouldn't you give them, you know, more? Why wouldn't you give that more time, more thought, more epicness? And it just didn't have it. And they know it. I mean, they know it. So it like you said, it was just enough, but yeah, it was, the only good thing was just having those guys back, seeing their flashbacks and having those moments was good.
Well, it brought Hayden back to Star Wars,
which is right.
And now he's in all kinds of stuff, which is great.
Yeah. I mean, I'm super thankful that happened, but imagine if you would have had, I don't know if there's just too many cooks in the kitchen when they do stuff with Jedi or, you know, Jedi and Force sensitives and they just get too many people there. But
it seems like they're much better at the other stuff.
Right. Right. Exactly. So, I mean,
even Solo, like people who don't like it, I think most people would agree that Solo is probably better than 7, 8, or 9.
Oh, for sure. It's clean. It has a start and a finish.
Just a good movie.
It is. It's solid. And it even has Darth Maul, and it's nothing is disrupted. Everything still feels solid and it's good. It's crazy. This is a big kind of sigh of relief, I think, for the fandom, though. And it's like a uniting.
So what I was looking up, by the way, just real quick.
Yeah, go ahead.
Closing up here is this is kind of it.
Yeah.
For like the year.
I know. Yeah.
Like this is kind of Star Wars, really, for the year. There's Visions season 3.
Right.
And they did announce at Celebration, by the way, that the Ninth Jedi, the one that everyone really liked, is getting like its own little mini thing. Thank God. This literally, what has you guys, somebody at Disney listens to us, because we have been saying that specific thing for years, and we've been begging Disney to listen to us. So somebody at Disney does.
Thank God.
You can reach out to us. It's we'll talk.
Yeah, anytime, please.
But I mean, literally October 29th is Visions season 3. There's really no big Star Wars video games coming out this year. Outlaws came out and it was not particularly great, but that's kind of it until like next year. And there, the Ahsoka show is in development, so like they're saying we may see it like early next year, or but that's about it.
Yeah, I mean, and then you've got what, the next December
the Maul show.
Yeah,
Maul
shows.
Well, I think that'll be really good. That's the Dave Filoni, everything Sam Whitaker. Saying about it is like, oh dude, it's gonna be phenomenal.
I think next thing, the big movie is that Grogu, right? The Grogu Mandalorian.
Yeah, Mandalorian Grogu, which I think will be good. And then the Ryan Gosling Starfighter movie,
which seems like it could be cool. I mean, there's at least some hope for it, and it's
gonna at least lay a framework for like what happens after episode 9, so that like if it does well, then it could create enough buzz to where you're
right. It's almost a safe little test for them to do something kind of original. Figure out who's his nemesis in that. Like what's his struggle?
That's my guess with that real quick is that Starfighter is going to be what they thought Rogue Squadron was supposed to be.
Oh really?
Like whatever the framework for Rogue Squadron was. But I'm sure with like lawyers and contracts and everything, like it seems like Patty Jenkins like signed a contract, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like she like was on a, they did like a trailer for it and everything. My guess is that they're like, well, like that idea is good, but like we can't touch it because of, you know, contracts and all this stuff. And who knows what, who knows what the final delivered product has to be for that. Or, you know, if you probably can't even use the name of the rights of it or anything, or, you know, so, but my guess is that the Starfighter movie is what that was supposed to be. And now they're like, all right, well, we'll just like take that same framework.
Yeah.
And we'll just throw that afterwards and then go from there.
Well, that's what's kind of crazy. We learned about the Kenobi show is that it had Stuart Beatty, who was a completely different writer, who wrote all these different three movies, essentially. Like it was supposed to be like a trilogy of movies. And he wrote those. And once they're done, they're written, they belong to Lucasfilm. And Lucasfilm can say like, hey, we're going to take this piece from this writer. We like that. We own it. I mean, we hired him to write it.
Right.
And work with us. And if we go for the project, he's on. But we didn't. We moved a different direction and went, you know. So I think it's, you know, you're probably right. Something like maybe they had her write something, or there's some outlines that they're like, okay, well, yeah, we've tied this to her, but now we have a different writer coming in and we own maybe. I don't know. I don't really know all the legalities on that. But you're probably right. It's because it definitely seems like that. It's Starfighter. Like Rogue Squadron is a bunch of Starfighters. You know what I mean? It's like, so. Yeah, I think it's going to be really interesting to see. I'm excited for that, though. I think just to see what are they going to, like the Rey movie, that's a full pause, because the fandom is completely, let's be honest, split around Rey Skywalker. I mean, sorry, but like everyone is still, unfortunately, every little short that you and I post about anything to do with Rey Skywalker, it's just totally split. People just... That tells you something, you know, it's a little bit of a misstep. In my opinion, I think you should have thought that through a bit more. So now you have to decide, what is Rey's legacy? What is she going to do? Is she going to carry on the Skywalker legacy? Is there going to be like, I want some Mara Jade, the force sensitive children that she has to go on a mission and go find Luke's actual freaking children that he didn't know about. And it's super sad. Just like Cass has no idea that he has a son who's trained by Luke later on. Let's go. You know, I mean, this is Star Wars. It can go in all these different directions, but I think it'll be interesting to see. There's just not much, like you said, not much coming up. There's more books and different things, you know, going on. They're wrapping up the High Republic series, essentially. That'll be done. That's not really going anywhere, you know?
Yeah.
So
there's no games or anything.
You know what I was going to say? You remember when Dan and Dave, all that hype coming out of Game of Thrones, everyone had them doing different shows here and there or whatever?
Nothing.
Why? Because I was talking to a colleague today and she was like, God, season 8 just she just was so disappointed. She was so disappointed. And I was just talking to her about it and I was letting her get it off her chest. And I don't even know how it came up, but we were talking about, like, I think we were talking about recommending TV shows. And I, uh, you, was Severance was a show on Apple. I know, so good. Where's recommended shows? Yeah, I have a whole other topic. But yeah, that came up and it made me think, like, yeah, whatever happened to those guys? Are those guys doing anything? Did they ever get another gig somewhere?
Yeah, and they do. They have some other stuff going on. Yeah.
And that's good. That's good. I'm glad they do. But like the big thing is like Star Wars has been saying for years, Rian Johnson, we're gonna do a Dan and Dave thing. Watiti is going to be doing something. It's like, dude, thank God. One, to stop telling us that stuff. Let us go into the unknown and have nothing and surprise us with a Ryan Gosling thing like that. Cool. Now we know you're actually going to do it. They didn't tease some last Starfighter thing. They just said, here he is at Celebration. Here's your surprise. We're making this and it's all, you know, approved and greenlit. And here we go. So I don't know. We'll just have to kind of see. I think it's, their shift now is definitely they're going to shift away from this episode 3 to episode 4 timeline. They're going to shift into this finish up the Mandoverse, right? Yeah. It feels kind of rushed. It sounds like Dave even thought he was going to have more seasons of Ahsoka. I'm not so sure that he is, right? Yeah. Because, you know, he's like you said, Ahsoka didn't seem, wasn't really, you weren't feeling it. And the Sabine thing is sort of a misstep. But Dave needs like 3 seasons, 4. He's like a 4 season guy. You know, he wants to kind of build that up and give you those big payoff moments like he does in Rebels. And it doesn't seem like he's going to get that opportunity. He's working with different people. So even if it's Jon Favreau, they have different visions possibly where they're working together. But I mean, I'm interested to see how they tie that all up with Thrawn, you know, and Ezra Bridger. So that's the future of Star Wars. But for now, Andor was freaking sick. It was absolutely so good.
Absolutely phenomenal.
God, as there's more topics, we'll bring them up and we'll come back and circle back and do another conversation about it because it's worthy of multiple conversations. I mean, for example, one, I'll leave us on a cliffhanger here. When they were in Yavin, they asked 3 times, I counted 3 times, how are we sure Luthen's dead? Now, why they asked that, I was like, why is it like, why are they doing that? What's the director's choice? And is it just this paranoia? Like they're really unsure because we know the consequences of him living doesn't matter because we've seen Rogue One. You know, we know right. What's going to happen. So unless there's these other little threads that they're, I mean, leaving, you know, Cassian's son or daughter or whatever, a child as a thread is amazing. But the whole Luthen one was, and Clea's alive, you know, like yeah. She's still a part of the rebellion and stuff. And you've got someone like Omega, right, who is growing up in the rebellion, possibly Asajj Ventress. They're leaving a lot of stuff around this time period that I wonder what they are cooking up. So
yeah,
I don't know. We'll have to see. But anyways, all right. That's it, guys. Just want to give our thoughts here on Andor. We both freaking loved it. It was, I think it fucked. Well, it's almost dropped the F-bomb. So excited. I'll just go and say it. I think it freaking saved Star Wars.
Oh, I think it did too.
Because I, God, so happy with it and could talk about it for days. But we'll be back. Thanks, guys. We appreciate y'all. We'll be back with more Star Wars content. Be sure to follow Matt at Super Gains Bros. Got a lot of stuff dropping over there and over at Bend the Knee as well, too. And until next time, guys, may the Force be with you.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.